We are privileged to bring to you another series of spiritual conferences given by Father John A. Hardin, S.J., professor at the Jesuit School of Theology in Chicago and at St. John's University in New York. Father Hardin is a well-known retreat master, author, and spiritual director. Each conference in this series is separate in itself, and yet together they form a complete retreat, the overall theme being sacrifice and love. The heart of all spirituality is sacrifice, and a spiritual life not built on sacrifice is building on sand. In the following conference, Father Hardin speaks on the subject, Death, Judgment, and Hell. Father Hardin.
Our meditations for today will be, understandably, sobering ones. Our present reflection is on death, judgment, and hell. Over the years, our modern Jesuit generals have warned us never to give the spiritual exercises without speaking on death, judgment, and hell, as an obedient son of St. Ignatius, I am sharing these three important reflections with you this evening. We have seen something of the meaning and gravity of sin. What bears emphasis is that sin, by its very essence, is related to God. There is no such thing as a purely philosophical or psychological or social sin. No doubt, sin affects many people, beginning with the sinner. It does harm to others. It injures society. But the essence of sin is that it offends God. And this, by the way, is not merely the teaching of the infallible Church founded by Christ. It is the verdict of all religious history. All religions of all mankind have always understood, and they all have names for an offense against the deity. That's sin. We would then expect God, whom sin offends, not to be indifferent or impassive to the commission of sin. God's response to sin we call punishment. Now, there are two kinds of punishment that God inflicts on sin. They are punitive and what we call remedial. Punitive punishment, which sounds like needless repetition, but is not, means that God punishes sin in order to, well, inflict suffering or pain where the person had offended God by indulging himself against the will of God. If sin is against the will of God, pain is against the will of man. It's all that simple. Moreover, God punishes, as we say, remedially. That is, He inflicts pain indeed, but not precisely or primarily, in order to, as it were, make up for the indulgence by a creature against God's will, but in order to bring the sinner back to God. Having said this, we should also remind ourselves that there are two kinds of drastic punishment that God inflicts for grave sin. There are two kinds of death. Death of the body and death of the soul. In between stands the judgment. With that as our backdrop, now we reflect on the subject of death. It is remarkable how the whole human race is agreed that all living beings, that is, human beings, now on earth, will die. Is that remarkable? None of us has yet died. We're all sure that we shall. Faith tells us, however, that we were not to have died. That our mortality is the fruit of sin. We were to have, had our first parents remained faithful, to have inherited from them not only the life of God, which we call the state of grace, we were also to have inherited from them immortality of the body. Well, they sinned. And they died, and we will die. What's the lesson? The lesson of death. The first lesson, I think, is the fact that we are all somehow mysteriously united, and in the deepest sense of the word, co-responsible. Only one man sinned, yet the whole human race, so faith tells us, pays the consequence of his sin. There is no such thing as anyone ever sinning really in total solitude. Anyone who sins affects, if you please, the whole human race. Even as we know and we shall see, anyone who merits, does good, benefits the whole human race. Rather than blame Adam, which we are sometimes tempted to do, we should look to ourselves and ask ourselves how much we have contributed. What a contribution. To the blindness and the weakness and the estrangement from God of mankind because we have sinned. And any figure of speech we use, we know, is as nothing compared to the reality. On my way from 83rd and Park, where I live, to 86th and Lexington in New York, where I get the subway, I always have to cross the street and pass the Park Avenue Community Church. They have some of the most delightful mottos. I think they change them 3 times a week outside the church. The latest, just before I left New York, is a pebble on the Pacific affects the ocean. As we look over the chaos in once flourishing institutions of Catholic Christianity, the defection of by now only the Lord knows how many thousands of priests, the departure from the religious life of over 50,000 sisters in the last decade, the disintegration of whole school systems, dioceses with 40, 50 empty convents. I gave a retreat for 3 days before the Feast of the Sacred Heart to Mother Teresa and her community before she founded her most recent community, the Sisters of the Word, in an abandoned convent built in 57, so the cornerstone says, unoccupied for the last 3 years. As we look over these shambles of family life, one of my students told me the other day that a judge friend of his in New York, a Catholic who has been witnessing, as he may, civil marriages, would average a few years ago up to 400 marriages a year. Last year, he had less than 10. They're just living together. It is one thing, however, to reflect on what is happening, and much more difficult to strike our breasts and say, mea culpa. Only God knows to what extent we have contributed what we should be told, all of us, is that we have contributed. So much for the first lesson, that sin, as faith tells us, occurred in Adam's case, so in its own measure in our case, is social in its consequences. And people don't have to witness our sin. It's not just that example I am talking about. It is the mystery of human solidarity. But then, we are not now merely speculating, we are reflecting meditatively on our own forthcoming, sooner than we expect, leaving this world. There are two facts about death that we should face up to. First is the certainty that we shall die. Well, more than that. Not only are we sure we shall die, but we are sure we shall die as we have lived. If we live in God's friendship, we shall die in His friendship. Now, God is merciful, and there are, as we know, occasions, and we praise the Lord when we hear about it, when some lifelong sinner, estranged from God for years, suddenly makes, as we say, a deathbed conversion. President Calles of Mexico, by the way, was one. As I was informed by one of my Jesuit confreres from Mexico, who was told this by the priest who heard Caius' last confession. Isn't that beautiful? But if there are deathbed conversions, let's be sure there are no deathbed perversions. Get it? No one on his deathbed suddenly turns his back on God. Comforting, isn't it? We need to hear that. It's all that easy. Well, it seems hard as we drag ourselves through life. Any figure of speech will do. A tall mountain, a difficult road, a jungle. The Orientals use a large body of water. Well, whatever the lifespan is and the struggles we've got to undergo through life, it's very short. The younger persons in chapel, let me assure you, it's very short. All we've got to do, that's all, is just remain in His friendship. And of course, we know what this means. It means, in large measure, walking hand in hand with God through the darkness. But then it's all over. Thank God. Viva. That's the certitude. What is the incertitude? It is, well, such minor details as when, where and under what circumstances. This past Christmas, well, just before Christmas, my last class day in New York City, one of the students suddenly had a seizure, collapsed. I absolved him. One of the other priest students was better prepared than I. He had his oils, anointed him. He didn't recover. A few weeks later, died. My pastor in Cleveland, Monsignor Sheffield, just like him. He was always an impresario. If it was dramatic, that was Father John. As a sister in charge of servers once described him to us when we came back to her for consolation after he, well, told us off. Boys, you know Father John is a diamond in the rough. A great man. Shaped my life. I wasn't there to witness his most dramatic action. It was graduation night on a cool June evening before an auditorium filled with the relatives and guests of the graduating class. He was on the stage, how appropriate, giving out the awards to the high school graduates. Had an attack. And little Sister James, you wouldn't believe she could do it. The principal rushed up and grabbed him in her arms as a priest from the front seat gave him absolution. He died on the stage. Well, what I most like is John Francis Regis. He died in the confessional. Isn't that marvelous? So we don't know when, and it's just as well, isn't it? Suppose we knew exactly when we would die. How good God is, or where, asked Terry Wegerle, whose name I learned. I just came into class at the State University where I was teaching, put my books on the desk, when I heard a crash, turned around in time to see a body flying through the air. He was on a motorcycle, was hit at right angles by a car, thrown some 50 feet, I dashed out. It had rained. How good God is. The night before, there was water in the streets. I scooped up some water, ran over, baptized this cracked skull, still alive. Helped to place him in the ambulance, which came a few minutes later. He died on the way to the hospital, had never been baptized, had been a clean living college student. The night before he died, some of his fraternity pals tried to encourage him to become a Catholic. His answer to them was, "Listen, fellows, I'll bet I'll get to heaven before you do." And for the first and perhaps last time in the history of that state institution, we had a Catholic funeral at the State University. Clearly, we are to be prepared for death. But may I suggest, before I leave this tantalizing subject, that we should honestly anticipate death. Why not? We ought to daily. Anticipating death, accept it from the hands of God. Isn't it wonderful? Though we die only once physically, we can die a thousand times in spirit. Marvelous, isn't it? And we can make that oblation to God to accept from His hands whatever kind of death He will send us. Because, you see, death is not only a punishment. Death is a sacrifice. It is, if you wish, in the noblest sense of the word, making a virtue of necessity. Virtue, do I say? We make a sublime oblation to God out of what's going to happen anyway. Why let it just happen? Why not profit from this gift of God? After death, judgment.
Please turn over to side B and push the play button immediately without rewinding the tape.